I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
I'm going to give the audience what I think they want.
They want chase scenes and car crashes.
They want the cops to bend the rules to get the job done. They want the boy to get the girl. They want the good guy to win. They want the bad guy to die, hopefully in the biggest explosion the budget will allow. But most importantly, Senator, they want to walk into a theater and for 90 minutes forget the fucking mess that you have left of this nation.
Go get your bubble gum.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Hello, and welcome to the All Out of Bubblegum podcast. With me today, I've got Marty.
Hello.
And Brandon.
Hello.
And today we are, scratching off a long-time watch list entry for all of us, which is the Siege of Firebase Gloria from 1988. Well, I guess, Brandon, you'd seen it before.
Yeah, I saw it several years ago, yeah.
Because you've been like, let's watch this for a long time. But but yeah, it was in one of our very first episodes we discussed watching this movie because it was one of the highest scoring entries on the original top 250 list.
Yeah.
That I think none of us had seen, because this was before you joined the podcast, Brandon. So none of us that were on that episode had seen it. And then also it is the highest rated movie to drop off the list on the new edition.
Which is unfortunate. I think. Yeah.
It went from like top 20 to like off the list completely.
Oh.
Something.
Oh, that's sad.
Maybe that's a gross exaggeration on my behalf. Yeah, and then of course the sadder circumstances that made us push this to the top of the watch pile was the passing of Wings Hauser last week on last Wednesday or something. What's his 15th? He must have been dead for a while before that came out.
Wow.
But he passed away, and I think he'd been ill for a long time. He had some kind of
COPD.
Yeah, something like that, where you struggle with breathing. Yeah, because the news broke on Thursday, but it says he passed away all the way back 15th.
Mm.
Yeah, and it's like, that was the third time, I think, it's been announced that he passed away, and the previous two times, he got better. maybe he didn't get better. That was kind of the problem, but he wasn't dead the other two times, but this time it is, he has passed away, for real. Of COPD is the English word for it, I guess, the disease. And I mean, he hasn't really been working a lot in years. 9 years ago, it's like when he last was doing like regular television appearances. But I also, this isn't really the Rip Wings Hauser episode, because I think if we were doing that, we should have done a double feature of like two of the films he directed and starred in.
Oh.
Yeah.
This was more of the, oh yeah, this is on our watch list, and also he's in it, so the timing lines up, hey. Yeah, I guess this is also the second Brian Tranchard Smith film that we do on the podcast.
Yep.
Yeah.
He directed Turkey Shoot, or whatever you called it when you watched it. Mm. I wasn't on that episode, but
like Death Camp Thatcher or something like that.
A movie of many names.
Okay.
Yeah, and I mean Brian Tranchard Smith, Australian trash merchant.
He was not discriminatory when it came to projects.
Yeah, he directed a lot, and like three of his movies maybe are well regarded. You've heard about a couple of them, but some of them are like Leprechaun 4 in Space, which is not well regarded. And I think this is like one of the three movies that is well regarded. It's this, Turkey Shoot, and The Man from Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Kind of like it's the movies that people be like, oh yeah, he was good. Then he made a lot of other garbage, like a made-for-TV George W. Bush biopic.
What?
Oh. Some other stuff. Yeah, you haven't seen a Timothy Bottoms W?
No.
DC 9/11, Time of Crisis?
What? You're making things up, aren't you?
No.
Okay.
And he also made like a Porky's movie in 2009. a man of many projects. But he's also, he's not directed anything in 11 years now. So, but I mean, old as fuck. So, but maybe, maybe the bottom fell out of the cheap garbage market at some point.
Yeah.
Anyway, we got this movie, Siege of Firebrace Gloria, a pretty downbeat Vietnam War movie about the titular siege of the titular firebase.
Yes.
Which I don't know if it was a, is this a, was this a real firebase?
I don't think so. I mean, the Tet Offensive was real, but the, I'm pretty sure Firebase Gloria is made up.
Yeah, so it's set, the backdrop is the Tet Offensive of 1968?
Yep.
Yeah, and Tet, for those that don't know, is the Vietnamese name for Chinese New Year, I guess.
Yeah.
It's the Lunar New Year Festival. And maybe you have more notes on what the Tet Offensive was and how that panned out.
Okay. Well, for a while, it seemed kind of like the Vietnam War was going into the United States' favor. Then all of a sudden, the communists unleashed this massive offensive across like all of South Vietnam. And they attacked cities and military bases and villages. And even though the United States and the South Vietnamese beat back the attackers, it really kind of like made people sour on the war back home in the United States. They kind of said, hey, I thought we were supposed to be winning this. And yet they unleashed this massive attack. Even if we fought them off, our leaders may be lying to us and the media too. And it just kind of soured people on the war. And it was a big turning point for the United States' involvement in the Vietnam War.
Still, though, they managed to drag it out for another 8 years or so.
Not quite 8 years, but yeah, yes. Long story short, yes.
But hey, at least they won, right?
Depends on who you ask.
Let me check my notes on that. Does it really, though? Does anyone in America argue that they won the war?
Once in a while, you'll see somebody that say that, well, we won the fighting part of it, you know, which, I mean, they say, like, we won every battle but lost the war kind of thing. So once in a while, you'll see that pop up, but... Yeah, not too often will you see somebody that just straight up says, oh, we won it completely. But, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, sentiment that says that we could have easily won or we did win every battle but lost the war. Or we left when we left in 73, it was kind of a U.S. victory in a way. I don't know. I mean, I haven't talked to too many people about it, but that's once in a while you'll see that pop up.
Yeah, it won so well that Vietnam just went back to being a communist country forever. Because I remember, I hear a lot of the arguments like, oh yeah, Korea was a draw. But
I mean, South Korea still exists.
All my knowledge of this comes from the Clint Eastwood movie, Heartbreak Ridge.
Which is about Grenada.
Yeah, where he invents a third war so that he can win one. But yeah, I guess the real star of this is kind of in his only leading role, I think, is R. Lee Ermey. Straight off, a year after Full Metal Jacket, I think this comes out.
I think Full Metal Jacket was 87, and this is 89, so maybe like 2 years afterwards.
All right. Sure, I'm not too great with years, but yeah, that's...
This was 88, but...
Oh, really, 88? Oh, Wikipedia says 89, but I don't know. It depends what you ask.
Yeah, but anyway, I'm pretty sure this is like his only... proper leading role.
Yeah.
Hot off his breakthrough in Full Metal Jacket. And, what does he play? He plays a hard-ass sergeant, because that's what he always plays.
And, yeah, even though he plays a sergeant here, he commands the screen like a field marshal. I think he gives a great performance here. And it's different enough from his performance in Full Metal Jacket to have an identity of its own. It's not just him screaming insults at people like some sort of force of nature for, like, 2 hours or anything like that. I mean, he is a person in this, a human being who has like feelings and thoughts and stuff like that. So it's a bit different from him in Full Metal Jacket, I'd say.
And how do you feel it compares to his performance in Miami Vice, season 4, episode 9, The Rising Sun of Death?
I've not seen that one.
No, me neither, to be honest. But it's another, it's a similar one, I think. It's a Jacuzza-themed episode, and he plays some kind of hard ass with who's been to Asia.
Oh, that's a shocker.
Guy had a range. He can play anything from a military general to a police sergeant.
Well, he was in Vietnam in real life, in the war.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, he was casted in Full Metal Jacket as himself, basically. as I understand, for Full Metal Jacket, he was just supposed to be the guy that the actor based it on, and they were like, well, can't you just play the part? Because I don't think we're going to find an actor to do it better.
Yeah, I think I heard that story somewhere along the line, yeah.
Yeah. So
I think he just plays himself in Full Metal Jacket.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I mean, there's not that much plot to this. Everyone's just sort of super demoralized. And we're like, but they're like, we have to defend this fire base.
Yeah, and there's an interesting aspect to this, like a moral, ethical aspect, where like Arlie Ermey and Wien Hauser, who are like soldiers, who are kind of partners in the same unit, they arrive at this fire base, and they see that it's run by this like naked, bong-hitting hippie guy who doesn't know what he's doing and is endangering everybody's lives. So what they do is they do something that's kind of interesting. They launch a coup, basically. They like overthrow this guy by like wounding him with like a grenade blast. And they seize command of like the fire base and whip everybody into shape. And I think that's kind of an interesting little twist of the plot right there.
Yeah.
It's like, what would you do in a situation like that? Would you stand by and let this naked guy like run your lives into the ground? Or would you like overthrow him and like start like a defense? I don't know. Would you be a bystander? I don't know. I think it's kind of an interesting little thing that it doesn't dwell on this, but it's a little interesting aspect of the film, I think.
Yeah, and you have this dynamic between like Ermey and like Hauser, who's his second in command.
Mm-hmm.
And Ermey is just his like his regular hard ass, just never say die kind of guy,
mm-hmm.
who doesn't think much of women and soldiers who aren't strong. He's kind of a very one note with it, like his personality in a way. Like that's like he is the stereotype military conservative guy, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have Wings Hauser, who's like plays this character sort of solely real to just be like completely fucking broken, and like his son passed away. Is it his son, or is it just they just call him? I was kind of like unsure, like, because it felt like it was some guy who died in the war. And I was like, well, his son kind of died in the war. I was sort of unsure, like, did his son pass away at home? Or is it just some guy who he's really close to died? But then he also sort of gets his own, he adopts a Vietnamese child.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't sure about the backstory to his character either. I'm not sure if it was his son who died or a relative or I don't know.
Yeah, it felt like it was his son, because since he adopted the other child to sort of raise as his new Vietnamese son, I guess.
Pee-wee.
Pee-wee, yes. Great name.
Yeah, who goes home to America at the end and gets a fun house.
Oh, man. And Wings Howard's character, he's kind of all over the map at times. You know, he's very compassionate toward this child that he... kidnaps. Well, doesn't kidnap, but his whole village gets massacred brutally, so he kind of, like, adopts his child. So he's kind of like, oh, playing with a child. Oh, he's such a nice guy. Then the next second, he's, like, literally tortures, like, a wounded Viet Cong soldier to death to get information out of him. So he's, I don't know, he's broken, like you said. He's a broken man.
Yeah. He has a scene, a getting drunk scene, which I think is just was in Wings Hauser's contract that I'm always going to always give me one scene where I'm getting drunk. I think every iconic Wings Hauser performance includes him getting drunk.
Whether the script actually needs him to or not.
Yeah. Like I say, I think that was in his rider, that let one scene where I don't have to pretend that I'm not drunk. Maybe. It's, yeah, like, God, what's it called?
Gedevan?
Gedevan, or yeah, get even, as some might call it, where he gets drunk, and yeah, a lot about it once.
Yes.
He always seems to be somewhat drunk in all of them.
But only in one scene in this one.
That we quite know. Surprising.
Yeah, he did drops a bottle of Johnny Walker Red, and Arlie Ermey chews him out for looking like a Cambodian witch doctor.
Yeah, that scene has not aged well, but other than that...
other than that, sure, the language in this movie is like really... There's absolutely no negative Asian stereotypes.
That is true.
Yeah.
But the action scenes in this film, I think, are terrific. I mean, they're not, like, realistic as they think they are, because it's not, like, a realistic war movie in many regards, but it's, like, it's all, it works better as an action movie than as a commentary on the horrors of war at times, you know? Like, we have this, like, back-and-forth trench battle between, like, the attacking communists and the defending Americans, and they're just, like, mowing people down left and right. It's not realistic, I would say. Not that I've ever seen war before, fortunately, but it comes across as, you know, like a thrilling action movie at times. And there's a lot of soldiers running around, a massive monstrous body count, and there's just like these little details that happen almost in the background that you just barely notice. Like one sequence when the Viet Cong are attacking Firebase Gloria, there's this big wide shot and you just see like this like guard tower getting blown to smithereens and people like falling out of it. And it's not focused on or anything like that, but it's in there in the frame. And it's like, in any other action movie, that would have been like its own individual shot. But in like a film like this, it's just part of this big vista of action that's taking place. And we have people with machetes and automatic weapons. There's like one African-American soldier that's like unleashing kung fu on the Vietnamese. And it's just, it's a big action spectacle, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it kind of has the sort of the problem with all like anti-war movies is that, oh yeah, we have an anti-war sentiment, but also we're making a movie, so we can't help but making all the fighting scenes look really cool.
Yeah, that's a problem with a lot of movies, war movies that is, but I'll forgive it.
Yeah, it's like, you can't make an anti-war movie because you make, I forget who said it, but it's like someone, some Truffaut or Godard type, like, oh, you can't make a real anti-violence movie because you can't help but make violence look cool.
I mean, and they're kind of right.
It's not wrong. That's it. Like, it just looks cool. Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, I want to see people shoot each other up on a movie. It's action movies rule. Don't want to be shot up in real life, but let me watch it.
Yeah. And there's a lot of good squib work and other violence details in this film, like severed heads mounted on pikes and blood squibs and decaying corpses and stuff like that, people missing limbs. They really put the attention to detail and like into like action when it came to like the details of the gore and stuff.
Oh yeah. I mean, this movie was made to entertain.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like Brian Trenchard Smith probably not like the number one guy to make an anti-war movie.
No.
But the film
he is a schlockmeister. He wants to blood and violence.
Yeah.
Yeah. But even in Turkish Shoot, you had to really look for the subtext.
Yes. It's just exploitation. This is kind of a Vietnam War exploitation film in itself, but I mean, it doesn't fall completely on its face regarding commentary on war, because it does have some like scenes that show like the point of view of the Viet Cong commander, and it kind of allows you to empathize with him a little bit. Not too much. It doesn't distract from the action at all. But originally, they were supposed to focus more on the relationship between the Viet Cong commander and Arlie Ermey. I think they're supposed to do bookend scenes originally with them, like before and after, like after the conflict was over. But then they scrapped that. Yeah. The studio scrapped that and just said, focus on the killing. And he's like, okay, I'll do that. And
I think Brian Trenchard Smith said, direct quote, "We need less stuff about the gooks."
Mm-hmm.
Jesus.
Yeah. Which just goes to show how how the mind of an executive worked back in the 80s.
Yeah. Yeah. And speaking of Brian Trenchard Smith, his wife shows up in this movie, Margaret Trenchard Smith. She plays Captain Flanagan, who's like the head of the medical team. Yeah, she's credited as Margie Gerard, but like according to Wikipedia, it's actually his wife who's plays the leader of the medical team.
Oh,
yeah. Looking at her filmography now, every single movie she was in was directed by Brian Trenchard Smith. So. That does check out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's obviously the character that Arlie Ermey gets to say his opinion about women in the army, too.
Well, she has a respectable character arc for a movie, I'd say. She kind of goes from, like, you know, not wanting to, like, have any violence in her operating room to, like, the very end, she shoots a guy. Which, I mean, it's probably not, like, the most encouraging arc to give a character, but, I mean, at least it's an arc that they give a character, I'd say. So it's something in the film's favor.
Yeah, she learns that, like, you can't go to war and only try to save people.
I guess so.
Not how it works, huh?
Yeah, I guess so.
This isn't What's it called? That Mel Gibson
movie? Oh, Hacksaw Ridge.
Oh, yeah. Fucking longest movie I ever saw. Sometimes I think I'm still watching it.
You got PTSD from it?
I just don't understand how a movie can win the Oscar for Best Editing when it's that long. And if you were going to win the Oscar for Best Editing, you need to cut out the first 40 minutes of that movie.
Oh, man, the first 40 minutes are like almost the best part of the movie, almost.
It lasted forever.
I liked it.
Yeah, I like Hacksaw Ridge, too. I mean, it's not perfect. It kind of isn't as realistic as it thinks it is. But, I mean, it's a decent follow your conscience story.
Mm-hmm. But hey, Mel Gibson is no Brian Trenchard Smith.
Okay, yes. And yeah, speaking of the cast of this, there's Albert Popwell shows up in here as Jones. He appeared in the first four.
Yeah,
he's Popwell. Oh, that's a pun. Oh, yeah. I didn't notice what I did there. He appears in the first four Dirty Harry movies as a different character each time. He shows up here as like some badass sergeant who like is initially stationed at Firebase Gloria, and he actually agrees with Arlie Ermey's kind of coup and take over the base. He does a good job, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah. He's in both Cleopatra Joneses.
Yeah.
Marty's favorite film series.
Fuck yeah.
The only thing that really strikes the wrong note, perhaps pun worthy, is maybe the music, because the music does kind of sound like, you know, 80s synthesizer music, which is okay if you're listening to like a rock album to have like that kind of sound. But like for like a Vietnam War movie that's like gritty and full of atrocities and stuff like that, having this kind of like synth score, I don't know if it really works all the time.
Yeah, it's the same thing. It's like you can't make an anti-war movie because, again, you want to put your synth score in it and look cool and sound cool.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Yeah, I think the only like real successful anti-war sentiment in the movie is like the arc of Wingshauser and like his ultimate fate.
Yeah.
Spoilers, but he sees his new adopted son get retaken by the Viet Cong, and he gets shot, and I think he's hit in the spine, I guess.
Oh, I thought he got hit in the nads.
Yes.
Well, maybe it went through his balls and like him in the spine. I don't know. That's, I mean, he's leaking out
maybe
his
like
crotch.
Both.
Okay.
But like he's shot up bad, and he's like, please kill me instead of taking me to the hospital because I don't want to live like this. I guess a dickless, possibly paralyzed. All of it.
And Arlie Ermey blows his brains out.
Yeah, he begs to be killed, and he gets his wish, and I mean, I guess then Arlie Ermey is just going to go back to being a hard ass because nothing affects him.
Yeah. I mean, the scene of Wingshauser being shot is perhaps like a moment of unintentional comedy because he's like, it's slow motion and he's screaming, Pee-wee. Then like, so he shoots him in the Pee-wee with the AK-47. And it's just, it's hard not to laugh. I mean, I know this is a pretty serious film for the most part, even if it is made by like a schlock master, but that moment gets me, as well as the very end, right before it ends. Like, the last word of the movie is Nard, then cut to credits. Yeah. It's just like, Nard, credits roll, and then it's like, those two moments kind of make me laugh. But I mean, for the most part, this movie is pretty downbeat, but it's still an enjoyable action movie. It does showcase the atrocities committed by both sides, and it gets pretty dark at times psychologically. I believe on RateYourMusic.com, like one of the secondary genres for this film that people chose for it is psychological horror, which, I mean, yeah. I guess it's kind of psychological horror, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, compared to any other sort of like, maybe not any other, but most Filipino shot, like Vietnamese exploitation stuff from the late 80s, this is the most downbeat one I've seen, I think. The rest of them are all like, oh yeah, cool, we won this, it's great. Although Robert Patrick shooting 150 people. And yeah, you see all the regulars show up in like smaller parts. If you watch enough Filipino action schlock, you start recognizing them. Like the photographer character.
Oh, yeah.
He's played by a guy who shows up in a lot of stuff called Nick Nicholson.
Yeah.
Who's an American actor who went to the Philippines and starred in like 50 or 100, I don't know, Schlock movies. However many they could put him in.
I kind of wish they gave the photographer character more of an arc. They kind of did, because he starts off as this like hippie war correspondent, and they like confiscate his weed or whatever it is, and they say, now you're on the front line. And I mean, you see him fighting a little bit, but maybe it was left on the cutting room floor. Maybe I would have preferred to see more with the photographer, like him turning into like a killing war machine or something like that.
Yeah, maybe he was just, he just had to get off set to go shoot his next movie.
Yeah, that too.
Between him and the Flanagan character, it doesn't seem like he had a lot of ideas for the side characters' as arcs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Two of these characters can have arcs, the rest, no.
Yeah, one of the major problems with this film, not a major problem, because I love this movie. I think this is a great action movie. But a lot of the side characters are not as developed as you would want them to be. Like, there's a few characters that show up here and there as part of, like, the original squad at the beginning that Arlie Ermey and Wings Hauser belong to. And they just kind of disappear into the scenery. And it's kind of unfortunate. I would have preferred a bit more depth to some of them, but I mean, it's only like 90 minutes long, so what you, yeah.
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think the main characters have that much depth either.
Okay, yeah, that's a good point. Well, yeah, Wings Hauser and Arlie Ermey, yeah. Well, they have more depth than everybody else. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really, really well-made Namsploitation 80s version of Zulu.
Oh, yes.
Could have used a bit more character stuff. Some more interesting characters.
Yeah, this is definitely a Zulu riff, and I love it. I mean, I love Zulu. It's one of my favorite war movies. About the Battle of Rorke's Drift during the Anglo-Zulu War in 1879. And this is just like Zulu set in Vietnam. And it's just, okay, Zulu does a few things better. I mean, many things better. Pretty much everything better. But
except the squibs.
Yes, except the squibs. Yes, except the violence. Zulu looks pretty fake in that regard. But anyway, back to the Siege of Firebase Gloria. Another kind of major, minor complaint I have about the film is it doesn't really have the best sense of geography all the time. Like, the Siege of the Firebase, you know, there's like, occasionally there'll be like a line of dialogue about, oh, they're attacking the northern side. And you have like, the audience has no clue what that means. And it's like, we have like five guys defending this whole firebase, and yet like 200 Americans died over the course of the battle scene. So it doesn't really give you the same sense of scale that Zulu gave, or the sense of geography that Zulu gave. Because the Siege of Firebase Gloria has just like endless amounts of extras for the American side, even though lines of dialogue seem to like indicate that they're running out of men, and they have to like use wounded people to fight in the front lines. But it just seems like there's an endless amount of people coming out of both sides, which does not sound right. I should not have put that way. Both sides, coming out of both sides, but anyway. But yeah, it's just a minor complaint. I mean, it's an action explosion-filled extravaganza. I think this movie works really well.
Yeah, the action side of it is top-notch.
Oh yeah, there's just so much death and destruction here, and we have helicopters that were supposedly being used for like the Filipino government's war against communist guerrillas, so they had to like go back and forth between fighting the communist guerrillas in the Philippines and filming this movie. And the use of like helicopters does make the budget feel a bit bigger than it probably was. I mean, this is probably like a relatively small budget production, but like all these helicopters running around, flying around, shooting missiles and stuff. It does make it seem like the budget was bigger than what it actually was due to the cooperation of the Filipino military.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like this is, I think it's the most, well, I don't know if it's the most well-rounded, but because I don't know how well-rounded it is, but I guess in the context of other Filipino shot action slog, it's the most well-rounded and best version of that it could possibly be. Because I mean, a lot of the others, it's just the schlock. In this one, there's an attempt at substance.
Yes.
Under the, you're not going to get in, I don't know, like whatever it's called, like Phantom Soldiers or Dog Tags or whatever. 100 of them.
Yeah.
Generic, just shoot 'em ups.
Platoon leader.
Platoon leader? Hey, Michael Dudikoff?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if that was shot in the Philippines, but.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. It's a canon film. That's what I know. I mean, I think American Ninja was shot in the Philippines, so might as well have.
Even that famous Vietnam exploitation, low budget schlock film Apocalypse Now was filmed in the Philippines.
I mean, everything was shot in the Philippines.
Yeah,
that was the one country who collaborated because of their evil dictator who would sell anything for money.
Marcos.
Yeah. So you could put anything in the Philippines. I think they were like, "Yes, yes, come, come." Please shoot it here.
Yeah, no, we haven't really gotten into the character of AJ Moran or Moron or whatever his name is yet. He's kind of like the helicopter pilot who like helps Firebase Gloria survive the assault. And he's definitely a gung-ho guy. He's got like the American flag like wrapped around his like forehead. And he's like, "Do you want fries with that?" When he like goes like, yeah, like when he like, he go to the request supplies from him. He's like, "This is Burger King. Can I take your order?" And they're just, I mean, it's just a funny little, I mean, it shows like how soldiers cope with the horrors of war with humor, I guess, or something like that. But he's a gung-ho character, yeah. Played by Gary Hirschberger. And he's okay. I mean, he kind of, you know, pretends to be a captain at one point to commandeer some aircraft to go help Firebase Gloria survive the siege. So he does a pretty good job there.
Yeah, he's like the third actor in this that I know who is, because he was on Twin Peaks.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He played one of the teen characters. I don't know if you ever watched Twin Peaks, but one of the main characters is called Bobby, and his friend is played by Gary Hirschberger.
No, oh, I did not know that.
He's in both the show and the movie, I think.
Oh, popular character, I guess.
Yeah, not really. If I remember correctly, he spends most of like season two on like one of the most hated plots, which is a amnesia plot where some 50-year-old lady gets amnesia and she thinks she's 19, and then she starts banging Gary Hirschberger. And that's one of the more hated plot lines of season two. So
I have no idea why.
Season two is a something. Storylines. Well, it's funny because you say like the fries with that, because one of the production companies of this is called Fries Entertainment. And I'm like, was that part of the deal? Were they like, you have to make references to Burger King in this movie, or we won't give you money. Because they also produced a movie called Fast Food the same year with Jim Varney. I don't know.
Oh, we're going down the rabbit hole into fast food cinema.
Well, the films of Fry's Entertainment, and why are they called Fry's Entertainment? Many questions. So few answers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you have any knowledge about Fry's Entertainment, please send us an email.
If you were you were employed by Fry's Entertainment in the 1980s, let us know. Their filmography is crazy. It's like Fast Food and Firebase Gloria and a Lyndon B. Johnson biopic with Randy Quaid.
Oh, that sounds good. I watched that. Does he whip out Jumbo in it?
You'd hope so.
Yeah, I hope so.
Probably the most hung president.
Probably? I think we mean definitely.
I don't have data on that. A lot of other presidential dicks, to be honest.
Well, we all know James Buchanan had the smallest one. I mean, come on. Look at that guy.
I don't even know what that guy looks like.
Okay. He's the one who never had a wife.
Oh, the gay president. The secretly gay president.
Yeah.
Did he have a friend who, a roommate who he just stayed with for 35 years?
Yeah.
Don't question it.
It was the 1800s, man.
That's not gay, because if that's gay, then Cary Grant and Randall Scott were gay too.
And they could never be gay.
No. Now, we all know that Donald Trump has the smallest dick toe, right?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about him, yeah.
I don't know. I think nobody's ever seen William Howard Taft's penis, so the data's out there.
Yeah. He's never even seen it. Yeah, he's too fat. Well, anyway.
So, yeah,
if you, back to if you have any data on presidential penises, write us an email.
Well, all I know is that Wing Hauser doesn't have one after the end of this movie when he gets it shot off.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can even see blood gushing out of his pants, too. It's pretty graphic. Yeah.
Yes.
See, he was rock hard when he got shot in the wang, in the heart. So.
But, yeah, there's some good squib work here like that. And one of my favorite squibs in the movie is like when Arlie Ermey is tussling with the Viet Cong commander. He like has to take out his revolver and shoot the other soldier. It's a low angle shot. You see like blood like splatter on the camera lens from it. It's just a nice little touch right there that kind of amplifies the goriness of the situation.
Oh yeah,
always a fan of when the blood hits the lens.
Yeah, and there's like another scene where Arlie Ermey mans a 50 caliber machine gun briefly and just mows down a bunch of people. And doesn't he kill like 80 or 90 people in this film? Or something like that? I can't remember.
It has to be, almost.
Yeah. And Wings Hauser just filling up the body bags. It's great to see.
I think Hauser gets about 50 or something.
Yeah. And it kind of reminds me of like a World War I movie, almost, with them like fighting the trenches and going back and forth and stuff like that. And the action scenes, as I said already, I mean, they're incredible. And they're worth watching the movie for, even if you aren't going to get much out of like the anti-war sentiment in the film. Because that stuff's kind of rocky, you know? It's kind of like, we want to have like this anti-war like statement, but at the same time, look at these awesome blood squibs and all this cool carnage taking place. So it works better as an action movie than it does like an anti-war masterpiece, like All Quiet on the Western Front or something like that.
My favorite scene in this is the scene where the two women approach the firebase.
Oh yeah.
And Wings Hauser tells the guy, Murphy, played by Mark Neely, to shoot them.
Mm-hmm.
Who then refuses, and then Wings Hauser just shoots them himself, and they blow up. Oh yeah, that was cool, and it has a bit of an anti-war sentiment.
Yeah, and it has...
You have to shoot innocent-looking women.
Yeah, and there's a great one-liner after it, like, this is Vietnam, even the women have giant balls, or something like that.
Yeah. Which is foreshadowing his fate.
Where he gets his balls shot off, yes. Loses it. Yeah, castrated.
Yeah, when you say All Quiet on the Western Front, are you talking like 1930 or like the one from like 2 years ago?
I'm talking about the one from 1930.
It's Brandon. Come on.
Yeah. Well, I like the new one too.
Yeah, but I was going to say because it works for the old one as like an anti-war movie, because basically in 1930 they couldn't really make action look cool yet. So it sort of works.
Yeah.
They just introduced sound, so they were shit at visual filmmaking right then. So it was like, that was the one time they pulled it off. Because the new one, it's the same issue as this. It's just like, oh yeah, it's anti-war, so let's make all the action scenes look like a fucking video game. Oh yeah, okay.
That's a legitimate concern, but I do think the action in the 1930 version of All Quiet on the Western Front is kind of underrated. I mean, it's still very exciting, and I know it's not supposed to be exciting because it's horrifying war scenes, but it still looks pretty exciting at times with like all the camera just panning across the battlefield as like dozens of people get machine gunned to death, and there's people getting blown up by artillery and hand-to-hand combat and people throwing grenades and just charging across no man's land as artillery shells explode next to them. I mean, the 1930 version of All Quiet on the Western Front is, unfortunately, in some regards, pretty exciting.
Hmm.
That's just my take.
I've not seen either of them.
Oh. There's also a 1979 version, which is good, too.
Yeah, but isn't everyone, like, just super old in that one? It's like Donald Pleasance and Ernest
Borgnine.
I haven't seen it, but I hope they aren't playing, like, the soldiers, because they're, like, fucking 65 years old.
Well, Ernest Borgnine does play the old guy in the unit, so kind of.
Oh, well, he's old. Can't argue that point.
Yeah. I'm surprised we didn't throw in an Ernest Borgnine secret to his longevity joke in there.
Well, I mean, that's why Wings Hauser just gives up here. He can't, you know, it's no point in trying to live any longer. He knows it. It's over.
It's over. So, did you ever feel this film became too exploitive of the Vietnam War? Like the horror movie style severed heads on pikes and the big blood squibs and the decaying corpses and all that stuff. Do you ever get the feeling that this is a little too exploitive of really what happened in the Vietnam War? Do you feel that it was tasteful enough to work? Did you have any thoughts on that?
I mean, I'm never worried about Brian Trenchard Smith movies being tasteful.
Okay, fair enough.
I had it a little bit, but I'm also sort of fine with it.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. I mean, it's like you guys said, it's a Brian Trenchard Smith film, so it's going to be schlocky. But, you know, and war is horrific, so it does kind of have the gore that's necessary. Even though the scene where, like, one soldier, like, knocks his severed head off a pike with, like, the butt of his rifle seems a little too much, but it is what it is.
But it's also not really specific enough to not really be exploiting any actual circumstances of the Vietnam War.
Hey, that's a good point. That makes sense. Yeah, I know what you're saying, yeah. It's not like they turned, like, the My Lai Massacre into, like, a Rambo film or something like that.
Yeah, and all these people are made up, I presume.
Yeah, so. Except yeah, for...
The guy who wrote... It was written by a guy who was a real-life veteran.
Yeah, wasn't he, like, an Australian veteran of the war or something like that? Or because yeah. There were Australian and New Zealander troops in the Vietnam War, too. Might have been a Vietnam veteran.
Yeah, but I guess that kind of wraps it up, unless you guys want to do a fourth round on Wings Hauser's dick.
No.
I'm good.
All I have to say is this is kind of an action masterpiece in a way. I know that's kind of a strong word to use, but I mean, I love this movie when it comes to the action parts. Sure, it doesn't like fully fulfill its mission in terms of being like this great anti-war statement, but it's an action movie and it's great at that. So I highly recommend it.
Yeah, I think as far as like Vietnam exploitation goes, this is right up there with as good as you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
Great action and an attempt at having some substance beneath it. And Arlie Ermey and Wings Hauser are both great in the part. In they both have their very own sort of acting style. None of them's really ever reached outside of their comfort zone, I think. But they're good at what they do, and this is, let's say their second best performance from each, because I think slightly, Arlie Ermey definitely Full Metal Jacket, and Wings Hauser's got some stuff where he's good. But it's probably as good as it's going to get from this very particular subgenre. Probably yeah. Fry's Entertainment's masterpiece.
Yeah, no, I really liked it too. Great action. Maybe slightly repetitive, but it delivers the goods. So I enjoyed it.
Yeah, so that wraps it up for this week, I guess. Check out the usual places, our website, alloutofbubblegum.com, where you'll find links to things like our Discord and our Patreon. So I guess just should probably just mention it once in a while that, I mean, we don't really update the Patreon that much, but also the Patreon predates this podcast. It is for the website. It is not exclusively for the podcast, but we will try to record maybe another episode, more than one episode a year for the Patreon feed or something. Don't know what we have planned for next week yet, but we'll see you then.
Yeah.
See you then.
Bye for now.
All right, goodbye.
Bye-bye.
There's many a film that has suffered from creative interference for perceived and overriding commercial reasons. I wanted to make a battle movie like Zulu that represented the perspective of both sides. The Siege of Firebase Gloria was to be about war and reconciliation. Years after the fall of Saigon, our Marine hero meets a Viet Cong officer he had once fought hand-to-hand in the battle that killed his best friend. How does he feel about his former enemy? The Marine extends his hand and says in Vietnamese, "Welcome." Sentimental, perhaps, but I thought it worked. Their meeting and their reconciliation were cut from the movie shortly before the sound mix, rendering the story purely about a battle. Sales executives felt that from a US audience point of view, there was, and I quote, "too much emphasis on the gooks."
End of the story, Nard.